Okay, next one. Son of a bean. I'm not sure if the fader even works on this thing. Okay. Good morning, everybody. We are here. Move that back to me. Boop. There we go. So I did this new borders for those of you who can see this and watch this. Thought they looked pretty cool. Seen other people just kind of following the pattern there. That kind of looked cool that, you know, you could put other things up there and just shorten your own screen. Yeah, you don't have to see my face as big. It's pretty cool. Works out. There's a bunch of different patterns here. I have one specifically for Dr. Glidden that looks like this when he's on. Because he's dropping truth bombs. I got some bombs over here. Leave Big Farm behind over the top. And the call-in number right there. Boom. Done. Pretty nice, right? All right. Let's get started. So I have a bunch of things I could read to you. And kind of calling this one the Age of Deception and the Age of Reason, but this is going to be a multi-part video. On Wednesday, we're going to take a break from this trail that I'm going down here with this timeline of tyranny and what the hell happened to America and the world. And we're going to be discussing what in the nano freaking particle is going on with Dr. Monzo. So that's going to happen on Wednesday. Same time, same channel. All right, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. I can't say bat because of copyright reasons. Just kidding. Okay, so World of Order is one of the videos, or one of the books we're going to be reading from today. This is Eustace Mullins. There's a couple more that, you know, I was very well versed in Murder by Injection, which is kind of where I may have started off my channel 5-6 years ago, right around there. Reading from that, reading from Behold a Pale Horse, reading from maybe back then Johnny Cerucci, some of I brought him up. Why did I do that? yeah, cool. Thanks, man. He says, looks good, dude. Yeah, I would say, yeah. So, what was it called? Illuminati Unmasked, if you want to call just the Jesuits the whole problem. And the Roman Catholic Church, then you go the Johnny Cerucci route and you completely ignore the heels that are also involved, you know, like the international bankers. It's not so much that they're there, that, it's that they're sorcerers. These particular ones happen to be sorcerers who pretend to be Jews who are also actually Frankists. And that's where we're going to pretty much be at today. We're going to be talking a lot about the Rothschilds because it's not, even though you think it's cliche, it's extremely understated, because when people say it, they don't have any meat to it, right? They don't really have details. They don't have explanations. They don't have understanding of how things connect and how, you know, other people represent them in different areas so that people think, well, they stayed in Britain and they stayed in Europe. They didn't really come up. Bull effing shit. We have a Federal Reserve because of them. That's theirs. And they had control of about 90% of the railroads, thanks to Harriman. I believe it was Harriman. Avril Harriman actually stood in for Stalin when Stalin was having a little panic attack back in the day. From like 42 to 44, Avril Harriman was running the Soviet Union. Look it up. You probably won't find it, but it's very little known fact. It's a very hidden fact. But Avril Harriman went to Soviet Union when they're murdering and starving everybody and all that other stuff, and they're at war in World War II. He had a little panic attack when Germany started pushing back a little. And when that happened, Stalin was a fucking wreck, and Avril Harriman stuck his neck out and was sent over there as a Rothschild agent to handle the matter. Well, you know, Stalin cried in his hands or whatever the hell he was doing. Big bad tough guy. True story. Okay. So these things are going to matter. There's a Harriman Foundation at Columbia University. That should tell you exactly what Columbia University is in this country, right? All these universities. All right. So we're going to look at that. So here's my objective here. My objective here is to do a little bit of news today because there's some crazy shit happening. We need to talk about the United Nations, the World Health Organization, this bullshit about the avian flu, and how that's going to be their quote-unquote disease X that they're most likely going to be pushing, and specific dates that I think they're going to release information telling us that, hey, guess what? You're fucked again. We're going into another lockdown. You better be just as passive as you were the first time. We got to learn into how the Knights of Malta play into the OSS and the CIA. That's important. And what the dual responsibility here is, because you have the Roman Catholic Empire, of course, but you have the creation of these people who serve the Roman Catholic Empire as Knights of Malta and so on, being completely funded and created by the Rothschilds banking conglomerate. Okay, so we got to talk about that. And what I did do in my book, Priestcraft Beyond Babylon, is explain this in great, great detail. And if it's not as great of detail, wait for book number damn two. No, because more of the America stuff is going to happen in the book too. This was like a history from in the beginning. Like, it's like when you ask somebody a simple question, they're like, well, there was dinosaurs. And like, can you just speed it up to like the part that's, you know, what I asked you about, so we don't have to go through the whole issue. No. This takes you through a lot of the information that you're going to need to understand where these people come from. That's why it's called Priestcraft Beyond Babylon, because this is where this all kicked off. Sorcery. And you think that's strange. I was listening yesterday to quote-unquote reformed Satanists, not sure if there's such a thing, think they just get reassigned. I don't think they survive if they're quote-unquote, you know, even if they didn't get initiated yet. But I have this strange feeling that they don't exactly go anywhere. Just like a CIA agent, if they're all of a sudden telling you secrets, because they're disclosure agents now, and they want you to know something to be pissed off about, because this is how they work. This is how the Rothschilds also work. They fund both sides. They let everybody kill each other, and they need conflict. They need conflict. They need both parties, both sides of an argument, to be well equipped to destroy each other, so that nobody ever goes after them. And so that they can just sit there back and watch, throw their popcorn or little baby parts in their mouth and enjoy the night, you know? It's I know that was pretty disgusting, but it is what they do. So let's go back to Reading Rainbow. It should be pretty obvious that sodium fluoride plays in a big part into our passivity, but we'll go into that in a different manner from a different angle some other time. We could go back as far as 1865 with this. If I'm going to go through the whole timeline of tyranny and what happened to us, that will have to happen. That's going to happen in more detail in a book form. So the next one, Priestcraft Singularity, I have a lot of work to do because I have to detail an awful lot from what the hell happened, and pretty much start from Andrew Jackson at least, and move our way up to what the hell's happening now, right? And why are we being screwed over? Why are we on the skewer? You know, and why were we allowed to be spared all this time if this is the type of system that has stolen our country so long ago? Lots of answers to that. There is. Let me just pull this up. Oh, man, they dropped a bunch of poop bombs on me. Microsoft unleashes realistic deep fakes. I'm going to pull up the screen in here a second. I'm just kind of going through because I got more today. I get 500 emails a day, so they have a tendency of burying what I was looking for. Sorry, if you send me emails, there's a very strong possibility that your, not so much your email address, but your like tag name or whatever might appear on videos because I look at them when I'm doing videos. To look through my own email. All right. So this we're going to go widescreen for, I think. Boom. All right. There we go. So scrolling down here, where are you? I believe it's this one. And I got to talk to you about a couple other things too. All right. I don't know why. Why does it do that? Sometimes it just doesn't pop up the pictures. Just decides, screw your pictures. Screw your JPEGs. All right, so it says, let's go run down the list because we're going to get into some heavy-duty stuff here. Globalist program ChatGPT to reduce vaccine hesitancy by parroting public health narratives. Now, they're not doing this for COVID, quote-unquote COVID. They're doing it for what's coming next. They're prepping everything, and now they have AI to help them out. That's what we should be getting out of that article, okay? They learns forms of biased internet, so it is fake intelligence. Of course it is. It's going to go off. If you want something to write a book for you, first of all, you're an asshole. Second of all, you're going to be getting exactly what Wikipedia tells you is the world. You're not going to get anything that's true. It's not mining for reality. It's programmed to just repeat things. AI just scours the internet in a quick manner and takes a bunch of metadata when you request like the text to picture, and it tries to steal something and then change it just enough so it's not copyright, and then they print it. That's not coming out of the mind of AI. It's just stealing something that it finds. When it's doing its little sifting, and then it throws it at you, and alters it a little bit with a little bit of brushwork, a little airbrushing. You can buy a Therminator, a flamethrower wielding robotic dog, for less than $10,000. Does anybody need one of those? We might. You never know. Now, if I had like a welding torch on it, that'd be pretty cool. Or not, or like one of the kinds that cut through doors. Former movie mogul Harvey Weinstein's rape conviction is overturned by New York's top court. So, remember how he's going back and forth a lot through court? And he's been out of the picture for quite a few years there, right? So he's spent a little bit of time in there. But did we not see this happening coming? Was this not like telegraphed? Look at him. Look, I'm just a little old Jews, man. I'm so defenseless. Right. Sure, Harvey. You were so defenseless when you were raping everybody. But anyway, New York's highest court overturned Harvey Weinstein's 2020 rape conviction because the trial judge allowed three women who weren't part of the case to testify about prior uncharged alleged sex assault. So the judge burned the case herself, or himself. I'm thinking it was a her. Weinstein has not been released at this time. Soros-linked District Attorney Alvin Bragg said, "We will do everything in our power to retry this case." Judge Madeline Singus. So the Soros Link district attorney is the one that's trying to keep him in jail. Give me a fucking break, dude. Unless he's supposed to be the fall guy and he'll stay fallen, that's the only way he'd stay in. Otherwise, this is just a game for the outside world to be appeased. This is appeasement. Make us feel good about, we got a bad guy, so therefore all bad guys are done. Rape is no longer a problem in Hollywood and everything's clean. That's how people think. Oh, we got the bad guy. Oh, we got the Epstein of the world. Oh, everybody's, it's all gone now. Everything's perfect now. That wouldn't be happening other places. No, it's, I mean, we got the guy. I mean, come on. Judge Madeline Singus dissented and wrote that the Court of Appeals was continuing to a disturbing trend of overturning juries' guilty verdicts in cases involving sexual violence. 2 years ago, a Pennsylvania court decision threw out Bill Cosby's sexual assault conviction. Yeah, but they ruined the man already. He was going to start his own network, and they didn't have him in control. I'm not saying he would have been a bastion to truth or anything, but they wanted to make sure that they set that, squashed that, so that it wouldn't be another voice out there that they didn't have the handle on. That's why Cosby went down. He could have been very, very, very guilty of everything they said, but who knows? Weinstein, 72, I used to make fun of the jelly pudding. He's like, you know, because he drugged it or something. Like, drug the jelly pudding. Weinstein, 72, has been serving a 23-year sentence in a New York prison following his conviction on charges of criminal sex act for forcibly performing oral sex on him, on a film production assistant in 2006 and rape in the third degree for an attack on an aspiring actress in 2013. Weinstein was convicted in Los Angeles 2022 of another rape charge and sentenced to 16 years in prison. He is appealing that conviction too on the same ground. So he's still stuck. And there he is with his fancy walker. Yeah, everything about the movies that I used to watch when I was younger, it was completely awful and shit. Because, hey, it came from Hollywood. It's like if you watched a Tarantino movie, it was a Weinstein production. You know, they also did The Matrix. And Tarantino himself is an apologist for, what is his name? Roman Polanski raping a 12 or 13-year-old. He was on Howard Stern talking about how, come on, she wanted it. The sick fuck. They drugged her. Yeah, okay, well, you're still an adult and you're a sick man for doing it. So, plus, he probably had something to do with his own wife's and unborn child's murder. I'm talking about Polanski when I'm saying that. Oh, and by the way, they released Once Upon a Time in Hollywood on the 50-year anniversary of the Tate murders. Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice that he's a sick fuck like that and made it a ceremony about the death of five innocent people in a ritualistic manner? Make it witchy, he said. That's what Manson says he'd tell them. Make it look witchy. Virginia County, twice. Okay. Here it is. Boom. Here we go. Now, you want to know how they're going to, one of the ways, one of the many pronged approaches they're going to use for starving us all to death. And they're going to tell you that, hey, this magic shit that doesn't have any presence anywhere in a sample form, like any other virus, can't find a sample of it, can't find a pure sample, can't make it grow, can't make it infect anything, can't even tell you what the hell it is and what strain it is. We can only tell you fragments. In a computer model, FDA says bird flu fragments found in cow's milk. Well, there goes the dairy industry. Hope you didn't like milk, cheese, or anything else. He was infected with bird flu. If anybody believes that when a doctor or a conglomerate of people tell you that it's bird flu and it's not some other type of poisoning, then you're the idiot. It's not them anymore. You're the idiot. If you still believe in allopathy and their bullshit science, then you're the idiot. Plain and simple. At this point, hey, I'm not the only person out there showing you how much of a fraud this is. This is Pasteur's lie that's been happening since 1800s. It's about time you figured it out. Public health officials are continuing to monitor as an outbreak of avian flu. Now, that's a statement that's made on a G. Edward Griffin platform without any scrutiny to it. They're just saying that that's what they found. They're not saying that, how did they know that? They're not asking questions. They're just going with the story. That's a problem. And we're going to get into why G. Edward Griffin is a problem as well. Public health officials are continuing to monitor an outbreak of avian flu, also known as bird flu, continues to spread across country. Of course it does, because this is the new lockdown disease, everyone. Welcome to your future. It's going to be very short if we let it be. And your family is going to suffer if you're not doing your parental duty, which is by all means necessary, keeping them safe and fed, no matter what that means. No, I don't mean cannibalism. I mean, don't listen to government telling you and pushing you around and telling you can't do things. The strain known as H5N1, ooh, that's fancy, has sickened several mammals this year, according to Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Couldn't it be the shots that they give them, right? Couldn't it be the steroids that they give them? Couldn't it be the shitty food that they give them? Couldn't it be the lack of nutrition and nutrients that they don't give them? Couldn't it be the chemicals in the food, water, air, or other factors, right? No. It couldn't be a deliberate poisoning in any one of those cases. There's instances. It has to be a magical thing that they can never isolate and never show you a sample of. It has to be that thing. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, USDA, all criminally controlled. Criminally created, in fact. Several dairy cows have been infected, resulting in milk samples showing an inactive remnants of the virus. You know, there's nothing, no such thing as an active remnants of any virus. In remnants, what the hell are we talking about here? They're talking about pieces of genetic code that they're trying to call that a virus. And that's all done in a computer model. And one human case has been confirmed. One human case, locked down the country, everybody. And what is this case of? Someone got sick and they're saying, well, it's definitely the avian flu because it couldn't be any of the million of other things that possibly can make somebody not feel good. I must have had avian flu last night because I was sick. So it must have been what it was, right? Health officials say the food supply is safe. And do you ever question any of their science? Their quote-unquote science? When you already know that this is not a true thing, every statement after that is false. Health officials say that food supply is safe and the risk to the general public is currently low. Well, don't worry about that because they'll spray something in the air, blame it on the avian flu. They'll put something in your water if you're still drinking tap or washing with it, and they'll tell you it's the avian flu. They'll do something to poison you in some way, shape, or form, and they'll call it whatever it is they want to blame everything on, like they did with COVID. It's not that hard. If someone's sick with anything, not feeling well because of all the poisons and toxins in their environment or deliberate ones that are added to cause that effect, it'll all be blamed on the same thing. Galvanize that one thing and say, this is an epidemic because the World Health Organization is about to get their power. So we need to test it right away. The World Health Organization is going to elect it itself, finalize it in May, that they have these powers to dictate to other 194 member countries what they do in the event of Tedros himself declaring a pandemic. And he can do it preeminently. So he can do it, you know, based on a hunch that something's going to happen, call it a pandemic at that time. Even if there's no evidence of anything happening, he can be like, there's a pandemic, everybody locked down. And all member countries just have to obey the orders like a dictate. Just like the Security Council and the General Assembly, when they make a ruling, all member states are supposed to enact it, which means member countries, which means when they've already said disarmament a long, long time ago. So it's then up to the member countries to slowly change, alter, or abolish any laws that would secure that right for people. What do you think they've been doing? And they do it slowly and they whittle away and they cause murders themselves and then say, look, see, gun violence. These children are getting guns and shooting up schools. Like, no, they're getting drugs that disassociate them. They're getting raped by officials and then sent out to schools with guns and with other help and very tactical, maneuvering, meaning these people are definitely trained who go in with these kids and never get talked about. That go shooting up the place and make sure they get a good body count. These people are absolute demons. What is bird flu? Why are we talking about unicorns? Avian influenza or bird flu is an infectious viral. No, see, this is all lies. viral disease that primarily spreads amongst birds and is caused by infection with influenza A virus. None of that is a real thing. We just talked about fantasy for two sentences here. That's not anything to do with anything that's real. These viruses don't work. That doesn't work for us. Typically spread among wild aquatic birds, but can infect domestic poultry and other bird and animal species, according to the CDC. According to G. Edward Griffin, who believes things that come from the CDC. Okay, G. Edward Griffin need to know. So he's perpetuating the bullshit, everybody. Make that note and make it clear to yourself. Funny how right there you have Royal Rim and Rife. And yet, we're still talking about goddamn bird flu and influenza and things that the CDC says. Unfucking real. Moving on. Protests are up at universities across America. Rubber bullets have been used against protesters. Who cares? They created the protesters to be pro-Palestine and to be liberal pro-Palestine so that all non-liberal, non-left, quote-unquote, people would assume that in order, 'cause this is how stupid people work, and then this is how stupidly they do work. Well, if the people we don't agree with are pro-Palestine, we must be pro-Israel. Well, you're an idiot. How about both people, both groups of people are allowed to say murdering people for no good reason is a bad thing to do. It doesn't matter what their religion is. How about that? How about, and that doesn't make you a liberal, doesn't make you a Democrat, it makes you a human. But no, they have to gallop. It's really easy to steer the herd of sheep one direction or the other. Now let's look at this shit. Here's where it gets more interesting. Reality Zone. Well, that's quite the claim there, Mr. Edward Griffin. Edward Griffin. Oh, a no holds barred conversation with G. Edward Griffin. That's something I don't want to miss or completely neglect or care about. I met him. I did. And I was present when someone else at the dinner table had asked him if he ever had a chance to meet, look at this shit. Are they trying to make him a superhero or not? If he ever had a chance to meet Eustace Mullins, you know, the guy who he stole everything from to make his book Creature from Jekyll Island as they buried Eustace's work. Yeah, that guy. He said, no, but I sure wished I had. Yeah. I wonder if that conversation would have gone into a fisticuffs or not, because you kind of ripped him off. Anyhow, watered it down, ripped him off, and added just a little enough black pill stuff in there for me to be able to catch. All right, now, moving on. This is what's interesting. Okay, so this is coming from the New American. You know what the New American is? It's John Birch Society newspaper, right? Or their magazine. And we're going to talk about the John Birch Society here in a moment. Dr. Robert Malone, how bad is the bird flu outbreak? Why the hell are you asking this psychopath, who does know everything about venom peptides and using them to cleave DNA, who knows everything about that but plays dumb, who won't even talk about it, and you're going to ask this psychopath who's created basically the bioweapon that's murdering everybody, him and Kellen Carrico, Drew Weissman, and him. Why are you talking to this demon? And why are you asking him about reality, New American? What the hell is your friggin' problem? All right? What is going on here? And why is John Birch Society propping this CIA asset up like this? Do you want to know? Okay, let's talk about it. Where am I at? Is it this? No, I got to find it. Hold on. It's got a couple 33. Okay, this is 15 minutes long. There's a part where somebody... This whole thing is good? I almost want to let the whole thing roll, so hold on. I'll just bring it up a little bit here. The guy has a little introduction here going on, and then Eustace. The technique of infamy is to invent two lies, then get people arguing heatedly over which one of them is true, Ezra Pound. Exactly. And then fund both sides and let them kill each other. That's Rothschild way. That's actually the demons, the demiurge way, who they hang out with and who they this quote unquote thing that there was the spirits and the afterlife, and this is all that stuff is demons. All that stuff is what do you call it? Necromancy. And it's not cool. But anyway, moving on. Let's hear what they have to say.
A threat to Bolshevikism. Well, and the Bolsheviks do not see, they create a pariah and then they knock him down.
What the hell? Why is it not making noise from its face? Hold on. Oh. I had it turned down. That would probably have something to do with it, right? Now you gotta wait for a second. Let's save
it. Atrocities from the Bolshevik Revolution to World War II is automatically labeled, just as they did with Patton and now they're doing with Cindy Sheehan and others who stand in the way of this this internationalist, globalist, Zionist agenda. All right, 800-313-9443 is the number. And Scott in Massachusetts, hello there.
Hi, Rick.
Hello, Scott.
Hi, Eustace.
Hi there.
It's my pleasure to listen to you, sir. Wondering if, you guys are saying that these Morgenthals in high places go back to the 1930s. I think it goes back another 40 years from there.
Well, probably, Scott, but, you know, Roosevelt brought them all in under the big tent, you know?
Right.
I mean,
I was just wondering, Eustace, what your take is on the work of Henry Ford and what.
I want to read this quote for people out there listening to the radio. This is, it says, thinking is the hardest work there is, which is probably the reason so few engage in it. Henry Ford.
What happened to him?
Hey, good question.
Well, Henry Ford was, he changed the face of America, and he was just a farm boy from Michigan. He worked hard all his life, and he had no pretensions to anything. He became the richest man in the United States. I picked up a New York Times for 1927, and there was a two-page article about Henry Ford, the richest man in the world, in 1927.
Well, that was before the crash, too, you know.
Before the crash, yeah.
Yep. Things were booming, of course, the roaring 20s.
They were booming, but Henry Ford was the one that was booming.
Well, he was an inventive genius. He and Edison and some of his friends were just...
Oh, they were all friends, and they all felt the same way about the criminals in Washington.
Oh, yes, they did. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
To me, Henry Ford was the Bill Gates of the industrial era.
Oh, he certainly was.
But I'm particularly interested. Have you read his Dearborn Independent articles that he produced from the early 1920s?
I have a few of them here, for they're quite rare now, but I've read them all, I think.
Yeah, and so how do you, you know, what do you think about his? He had this synopsis all.
Well, he had the series on the International Jew, right?
Right. Well, they got it in a four-series book. You can get it on Amazon.com right now. It's called The International Jew by Henry Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Amazon has that on? I can't believe it.
Yeah, Amazon.com, you can get it.
Oh, they circulate a lot of my stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Amazon.com, The International Jew. It's like $36. It's a four-book series.
My gosh, well, I bet he's selling a lot of them.
But, you know, my question is, that, you know, Henry Ford wrote about this 85 years ago. This hasn't changed at all.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, nothing has changed.
And this one is another Henry Ford quote. It says, obstacles are those frightful things you see when you take your eyes off your goal. Obstacles are only present when you're not just grinding to make sure that you get to where you got to be, right?
They're doing just what they were doing when they went after him. They went after him. They tried to take his motor car company.
Right. They tried to take everything, and they actually made him recant and kind of like cower. And you know, as one of my greatest heroes of the 20th century, I'm wondering if you know what they actually did to him in order to make him submissive. I missed that in the history that I look for.
Well, it's not in the history, but it is quite a detailed thing. I have read accounts of it. They put so much pressure on all the people at Ford Motor Company, they were going to close them down.
Right.
That he had to make a public apology. And
So I don't want to interrupt too much, but there's another quote here. It says, it is well enough that the people of the nation do not understand our banking and monetary system. For if they did, I believe there would be a revolution before tomorrow morning. Henry Ford.
So then they just—they really didn't do much. They a public apology is all they could get, so they got that, and everybody walked away satisfied.
Right, and they actually blame some of his writings for some of the things that happened in Germany.
They blamed everybody for what happened in Germany, yeah. But the two people who were.
Here we go one more time. Mark this. All the anti-Semitism that exists in the United States today is the deliberate creation of the Jewish leaders and is a recent creation. The Jewish leaders want anti-Semitism here. Unable to create it among non-Jews, they are seeking the effects of it among the Jews by telling them that it exists. The Jewish leaders of the United States have done everything possible to keep the Dearborn independent away from the Jews, to prevent their reading it and learning the fact that no attack is being made on the Jews as Jews. Henry Ford, the International Jew, Article 42, 1921.
Who financed the Nazi movement were two Jewish bankers, the Warburgs and Max Oppenheimer.
Right, while Prescott Bush did the whole thing. And
yeah, he was right in there with them.
Sure he was. But, you know, it goes back even farther than that, right to the Protestant Reformation. And if people...
This guy makes a really good point here, and this is something else that we're also going to have to discuss, because the Counter-Reformation War is what we're experiencing, but it's just not known to most people who the players are, and the Rothschilds are among that.
People have to do, all the Protestants out there, God bless all of you, all you have to do is go back and read what Martin Luther had to say, and his words that were written around 1500, 1600 area, they're still applicable today.
They are indeed.
Say again?
They are indeed, because he was speaking from the heart.
Right. He wrote more concisely about the Zionist problem than even Henry Ford.
Oh, yes.
Which is hard, you know, because from a spiritual perspective, I see Mensheviks and I see Bolsheviks. And I see Bolsheviks creating the death and the strife and the war. Because they believe that all power comes out the end of a gun barrel.
Oh, yeah, that was Leon Trotsky.
Right, and then you have the Mensheviks that we have here who believe that power comes through control of the soul, and their whole object is to wage war on each individual's spiritual morality.
Well, that's the real Satanism there.
Well, they're both Satanists.
Yes, that's Satanist.
Right, they're both Satanists, but we've got the Mensheviks here, and around the world we've got these Bolsheviks doing what they do, and it's all a Zionist organization.
Oh, it is indeed.
Two different groups of Zionists.
It's 5,000 years old. It's not something that started last week.
No, sir, it hasn't. And Eustace, God bless you and the work you do. You too, Rick Adams.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, sir.
God, it's a pleasure always. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, and our number is 800.
Okay, so the reason why I'm playing this and why this pertains to the John Birch Society is coming up in the conversation. This whole segment is good, and this is all good information going forward into what we're going to be discussing in the next few radio shows, so this is why I'm letting it play out. It's going to get to the point where it wasn't just a quick transition, and I know that sometimes people need that, but this is all good information to keep in the back of your mind, keep in the back burner, because it will be referenced again. Now, when he gets to talking about, I think it's the next call, not this coming caller, but the next one that asks him about the John Birch Society. And that's where it gets back into a bit of a discussion. And I'm going to expand that discussion and explain why, because G. Edward Griffin is tied into the New American and the John Birch Society pretty heavily.
100-313-94. Eustace Mullins, our guest, he is quite a novel.
Oh, and by the way, I haven't been invited back ever since. I think they even stopped doing media passes because of me. Because I went there and I was very cordial, very kind. I was pushing Jerry Griffin's, you know, wheelchair along, but I was observing and I wasn't liking what I was seeing. And I was realizing that there was a lot of controlled opposition there. And then it's like, you know, you can't blame everybody. You don't know what the speaker's going to say before they say it. They don't really vet them like that. But there was too much of it going on. And it was too geared. It was too directed. It was too steering people away. I mean, I had Dr. Monsum on there, Scott Shara, and a couple other people that were there. That kept the sanity for me because they were speaking from the heart and being real people. And I needed that because after listening to all these other people who I thought at one point was someone worth, you know, spending my time talking to on my own show and stuff like that, Carrie Madej, things like that, they were throwing out garbage. So was David Martin. If you want to call him a doctor, you can. I call him what's his name? Who was Lex Luthor in the actual original Superman movies? Was that James Caan or whatever? Bald James Caan. I think that's who it was. Or no, it was the other guy. The guy from, you know who I'm talking about. Gene Hackman, I think it was. Gene Hackman, bald or something like that. Yeah, that dude just basically, from what he was saying on stage, showed that he's a venture capitalist, which is nothing wrong with that. But at the same time, he was like, F Taiwan, we can find, you know, mineral copper, which is interesting, somewhere else. And we can exploit that country. And we can just let Taiwan get, you know, go to hell. So there was a lot of sickness going on in that red pill event. So I talked about it afterward, and I think that's why I got kicked out. I mean, I don't know if I got blacklisted or not. I could, but the people who used to be my contacts just never answered the phone after that. And when I was trying to see if I could get back out there for another media pass, and they were all too far away. I was never going to be able to do it anyway. I can't afford to go flying places like that.
Knowledgeable man, he lived through the era that we could only imagine living through, from the Depression to World War One, World War Two, and he knows whereof he speaks from personal witness, and that makes all the difference in the world. And Eustace, we have Rudy in Texas now. Hello, Rudy.
Hello, Rick. How are you tonight?
Good, very good. Glad we could squeeze you in.
Oh, me too. I'm so glad to be able to talk with you and Mr. Mullins tonight.
Sure.
I have a lot of things that I would like to discuss, but there's one thing in particular that I heard Mr. Mullins say on a previous interview. I believe it was with Jack McLam.
Yes.
He had, just in passing, he mentioned that at one time, or he was there when the John Birch Society was founded and David Rockefeller had something to do with it.
Yeah.
Could you elaborate on that a little bit for me?
Well, it was Nelson Rockefeller that set it up.
Nelson, right. Okay.
Yeah. And I had two friends of mine there, John Hooker and his son, Wes Hooker, were there at that president. I mean, John Hooker was a powerful Chicago realtor, and he had some interests with Rockefeller.
Okay, I'm going to read this quote real quick. John Birch Society is communism's greatest ally. With its help, we will divide and confuse the American people until they have lost faith in their government, their nation has ceased to be a major world power, and their country is ripe for revolution. Nikita Khrushchev. That's his quote about the John Birch Society. Why would he even be thinking about the John Birch Society, let alone saying it as a pointed weapon against the American people? And then think about in the time frame in which he had said that. Pretty interesting, right?
And they set up the...
And also, we're going to get into the work of Depew, one of the people that they kicked out of the John Birch Society, and then they attacked him with federal charges all throughout the rest of his life to try to mar his name and his credibility, and they imprisoned him a couple times. But Depew was the guy who created the Minuteman movement, and we'll talk about that too.
John Birch Society, and... one of the Rockefellers' company was National Biscuit Company, and so they bought the Welsh Candy Company.
If you didn't understand what that is, National Biscuit is Nabisco, right?
Robert Welsh.
Was it like $10 million or something?
Oh, I don't know, but it was
funny. But it was overinflated, wasn't it?
Oh, it was very inflated.
Yeah, because, see, we did this program with Michael Collins Piper from the American Free Press, and he said exactly the same thing you're saying now.
Oh yes.
So this is a way that they can play both sides against the middle, I guess.
Well, that's exactly right. And the John Birch Society was set up to control, because you see, the Ford Foundation and the other foundations have been so exposed as pro-communist and anti-American.
See, now, see what he was just saying about Henry Ford versus the Ford Foundation. What they did to his company, they threw it on the public market, and then other demons acquired, right? So the Ford Foundation was so pro-communist, is what they're saying. So they had to make something so they could control the opposition, right? That's what they're talking about. The and okay, that's the same one that they just same quote, just in a different picture.
That they needed to get the people back into something which they thought was respectable. Oh. So they created the John Birch Society out of whole cloth, and it was a repeat of the Ford Foundation and the others. But
Henry Ford again rolling in his grave.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Incredible what they did to that company, and then they made it public. They put it on the stock exchange, and that was the end of it. His progeny sold out, unfortunately.
Oh, yes. They all sold out.
Real quick, on the screen, for those of you who cannot see it, it says John Birch, American hero, founder of Robert Welch. Okay. So they used that for their name. The guy was tortured by Chinese, I guess, or whatever. So anyway, Robert Welch was the brother of John Welch. John Welch owned the candy company. Robert Welch had already sold his candy company to his brother because it was failing during the Depression. So he was already pretty much out of it. He was working for his brother at the time. Robert Welch was the beneficiary, though, basically, because when John Welch's company was bought by Nelson Rockefeller, they paid him something like 20 times its value. Who does that? And then who merges and acquires a company keeps the owner on the payroll for 15 years at a high salary and puts them in charge of Nabisco, their own company. Very, very odd. So they had a steady stream, a huge chunk of money at first up front, and then a steady stream. And then Robert Welch has all the money in the world that he needs to then pay back the Rockefellers with this John Birch Society controlled opposition net for all the little fishies.
Not for many millions of dollars.
For a mess of pottage, as the scripture says, you know.
It was a mess, all right.
They sold their birthright. Rudy, so you bring up a good question now, you see, about the formation of the Birch Society, because, as I said, we had Mike Collins Piper talk about it, but I didn't realize that you, Eustace, were right on the scene at the time.
Well, no, I wasn't on the scene. I merely heard.
No, Eustace, I mean.
Oh, Eustace was. Yeah.
Eustace was on the scene at the time. You
well,
were
I wasn't actually on the scene, but Revelo Oliver was one of the founders of the John Birch Society.
Right.
And I spent a lot of time.
He was forced out, too.
He was forced out because he wouldn't go along with the pro-Israel policy.
Right.
So John Birch Society, pro-Israel meaning pro-Zionist. Keep that in mind. It will never be them who are at fault for anything. It's according to the John Birch Society. Let's just talk about J6 all day.
Right.
Well, thank you for answering that question and setting it straight for me. I'm sure my Bircher friends will be glad to know that.
Yeah, that's true, because it, you know, I was once a Bircher myself, and a lot of people were joiners and felt that it did, and it did a lot of good work in many ways. It certainly did, but unfortunately, they didn't realize who was really in control there, and there were always questions about Mr. Welch and his philosophies and his tactics and so forth. So, you know, now it all comes out, and people know now what they probably didn't know then at the time, you know?
Well, I still got a copy of Robert Welch's book, The Politician, which accused Eisenhower of being a communist, and Eisenhower was never a communist. He always worked for the communists.
Well, I don't know now. Wait a minute now. Didn't Robert Welch say he never actually accused him of being a communist?
Well, he did not. Now, that was distorted. But it became gospel, so nobody ever challenged that.
Well, you know, Eisenhower never wanted to sue. He didn't want anybody to read
it. Oh, he never. I don't think he ever complained about it in any way.
No, he did. He was very nervous about it, but he felt that most people would not have read it, and certainly the controlled media would not have published it and given it any sort of publication across the television medium or the radio networks at the time, or especially the New York Times. You know, they wouldn't want to give it any credence at all, because they were bought and paid for then. Yeah, if they had been bought and paid for 100 years, my goodness.
Oh, and J.P. Morgan and the Rothschilds, you know, actually bought the New York Times from the Sulzberger family.
Yeah, Yeah, yeah.
They put up the money.
Of course, of course. And, you know, they did the same thing, by the way. And, Rudy, you could stay on the line for this.
Okay.
They did the same thing, the powerful international banking families, with the colleges at Harvard, Yale, and so forth. They actually set up the history department. They paid to have the sciences, the various and sundry, what we now call social studies, history departments, civics, and so forth, so they could control the publishing of books, the textbooks that would be used, and literally the chairmanships of those departments were bought and paid for by these banking conglomerates. So they had to say what they were being paid to say. You know, he who pays the piper calls the tune. And that's exactly what...
Yeah, who pays the piper calls the tune, but who... This gets a little bit deeper than that, because they're only there in the position pretending to be what they are, because they were created through a society or a brotherhood that got them there through their sorcery. And I'm not, you're going to understand this a little bit later, but necromancy, all this stuff where they think that they're talking to their dead, their relatives, these are not those people. These are things that can imitate anything and convince you because you want to believe that that's what they are, and they can grant things, and they can sway and give great success to people and give them the information that they would need to pick horses correctly and, you know, all this other stuff and be successful. But they utilize these types of rituals to support and generate energy for the workings of the dark side, if you will. And in return, they get a little something that from the material world in return for supporting this evil that's coming and is here and is throughout this entire Rothschild / Bauer / whatever the hell they were called that before Bauer family. And that's why they are where they are, is because they're just like we would imagine for somebody who doesn't seem to ever lose. They are being protected on high by the Prince of Darkness.
What is the case today with the publications, the New York Times and so forth? They're no different now than they were then, only they're probably a little more bold about it today.
They're very bold now.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, George Baker, who was our J.P. Morgan sparker in a lot of enterprises, put up all the money for the Harvard Business School.
Absolutely.
He put up $25 million in cash.
Exactly, exactly. There you go. All right, Rudy. Wow. Anything else?
Well, I just wanted to say that I really do admire and respect Mr. Mullins and you for this, and I thank God for things like radio or for.
Thank you, Rudy. Good. The freedom of speech, if you will, of the airwaves.
Okay, we're done with that one. All right, so now let's get back to my face. Just kidding. Da da da. There I am. All right, so this just came across the wire. This is not something that I did not hear of. I mean, I have heard this before, but now it's being more solidified. Ask yourself when I'm reading this, where the hell do we live? Warrantless, because screw law, screw Constitution, because there isn't one. Let's stop pretending that there is what they say. There's no reason to anymore. Warrantless FISA surveillance to target American citizens who support freedom for Palestine. Do we support freedom for Palestine, or do we support life for humans who don't need to be murdered, right? Why murder children and people just simply because they're there and they're a nuisance to the one group who wants to call everything in the world Amalek so that they can justify their murderers? Guess what? We all are, if we're not them. So who's next? A new bill is being introduced in the U.S. Congress. U.S. Congress, you mean the Israeli Congress, you mean the Rothschild Congress, that would install actual thought police monitors across U.S. colleges and universities to secretly spy on students and faculty to make sure no one supports freedom for Palestine. They're so afraid of free thought. They're so afraid of dissenting voices that they need to do this. They need to take these measures, and they have to do it through Congress, which makes your government the enemy, by the way. Anyone supporting Palestine will be expelled or arrested, expelled, ruin their future, because they decided that they would, you know, not want to see little babies killed. So a good virtue, good virtuous human beings will be no longer allowed to play in the New World Order. Anyone supporting Palestine will be expelled or arrested and arrested for on what charge? Hate? Is that a fucking crime? Is it even hate to not want somebody to die? What do you come up with to say that that's what is the charge? And new government FISA spying powers will be must be anti-Semitism, which is pretty much a crime now, because we don't live in America. We live in the Greater Israel West, while they create Greater Israel East over there with all the money. Where do you think all that money is going? I made a meme that showed exactly what they're going to do with the money that they keep on funneling out of this country. They're going to put it in a nice big pile like the Joker and light it on fire. That's what they're going to do with it. Or they're going to nation build with it. But pretty soon, it's not going to be worth anything anyway. Anyone supporting Palestine, so that FISA spying powers will be used secretly to secretly spy on all the private communications of targeted individuals. Targeted individuals are the words that they used. This is Natural News. This is Mike Adams. This is all being done at the demands of Israel and the ADL, who call all the shots because they have a big, scary bank behind them. The big dog is not barking yet, but he's looking over their shoulder and making sure that people just obey. In order to insulate Israel from any criticism across the United States, to appease the Zionists, in other words, your country is about to be transformed into an Orwellian hell zone. And there's more, but you have to go watch this thing for that. Yeah. So, there you have it. Old Saucy, hello. Yes, according to them, exactly. Yes, in the 40s, the Germans were Amalek. Germanic people have been Amalek since the beginning, and they consider us them as well. And most of us are. When you get really down to like what the Scythians were in, I mean, they pretty much spread around everywhere. I mean, even if you're Italian, you're probably Germanic in a sense. And then it's all over. There's an awful lot of people who had the right way of living in their minds that was stomped out, burned up by Rome and replaced with Abrahamic death cult Saturn worship. And that's what it is. And cannibalism and necromancy. Yes. I know, right? Okay, so moving on to the next thing here. I have a couple. There's some red heifer stuff up here. I've got a lot of stuff up here. Oh, Netanyahu. Let's just throw this up here real quick. I gotta read this. Netanyahu. See what I did there? You saw what I did there, right? Where is it? There it is. Netanyahu exploits Passover for more biblical genocide propaganda. This is on April 22nd, slightly old, but still what? As Passover begins, and that was that day, April 22nd, the day that probably on Mount Olive there was one less red cow in the world, or five less. As Passover begins, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu is once again using the Bible to justify genocide in Gaza as he compares Hamas to Pharaoh and promises to land additional and painful plagues upon the Palestinians. Right. The people who are not doing anything are just getting bombed to hell. He's continuing to say, while he's creating victims, he's the victim. Very classic. Very classic. This is why you can't even tell them to go to Happy Camp for a little while, until things settle down, without them going crazy and wanting to kill everybody that sent them there to do a little bit of labor. Tonight is the beginning of the Jewish holiday of Passover. That was the 22nd. As signs of an imminent Israeli invasion of Rafah grow in southern Gaza, they're going to destroy all of it. Rafah was supposed to be the safe zone. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu gave a Passover speech over the weekend in which he suggested that Hamas is playing the role of the Pharaoh in the biblical Exodus story the existential threat to the Jewish people who stand at the heart of the holiday. By the way, all made up. All made up. I'm going to tell you right now. Old Testament is all made up. There. Kill me. I don't give a fuck. It's bullshit. And Ron, do you want to know why? Because most of it is read literal, and a lot of it is straight up this is spellcasting crap, and it's definitely many layers deep in cryptic language and gematria, so that the words that are said, so especially when they don't make any sense, and it's like, why do I care what are sent and got his groceries? It's because they're telling you something else that you're not picking up. Because in the gematria equivalent to these words, when you have the same numbers, they can mean the same thing, but they're completely different sentences, completely different statements. But you know, the literal one is what they control the surface level understanding people with that. And there you go. A lot of it is also symbolic. A lot of it's euphemism that's many thousands of years old, so we're not going to understand it. Netanyahu, instead of withdrawing from its extreme positions, the Hamas counts on internal divisions among us. It draws encouragement from the pressures that are turned against Israel's government. Thus, it only toughens its terms for the release of our hostages. We don't know if those hostages even fucking exist, and we don't know if Israel itself bombed those people too and killed their own hostages. They bombed everything. This is all based on another lie. Everything that comes out of their mouths is a lie. It hardens its heart and refuses to let our people go. Have we seen Hamas do anything in return? Except for like a little stage play where they have one guy come out after 52 days and say that the reason why they attacked him was because of the red heifer thing. I'm sure that wasn't just telegraphed by Israel itself and the EIDF and Mossad or whomever you want to call it, CIA. The guy was very clean for someone who they claimed was running around in tunnels in the dirt for the last 52 days. He came out with a brand new costume. He picked up his dry cleaning before he went to do the show. Where he was talking about why they attacked on October 7th, and certainly wasn't the IDF killing its own people in a helicopter blowing up shit. Of course not. It wasn't that. No. Stop it. Just because there's video of that and proof doesn't mean anything. Stop. Shut up. And this will happen soon. In the coming days, we will increase the military and political pressures on Hamas. No, what you mean to say is we're going to continue to murder Christians, Muslims, whomever. Because they're there, and because we said so, and now is our time. Because this is the only way to release our hostages and achieve our victory. How do you know where they even are? And wouldn't you not want to, you know, kill them if that's what your bullshit is? Who's the hostages and where are they? Are they real? Are the hostages in the room with us right now, Mr. Netanyahu? I have chosen to translate Netanyahu's Hebrew makat as plagues rather than hits, because it is crystal clear that he is evoking a very specific biblical context. Yes, evoking. Another thing that you do in magic. This is all a spell upon the American people and everyone else in the world. It's all based on the lie. Where the divine answer to Pharaoh's hardening of heart is the 10 plagues, Esar Hamakat in Hebrew. The hardening of the heart, quote, appears 19 times in the book of Exodus, and the refusal to let the people go 8 times. So he's Moses. Everybody, Netanyahu's Moses, another potentially fake character in the Bible. Their Bible. The Old Testament and New Testament were grafted together. They are not the same. They're not relatable. They are Babylonian bullshit magic with a lot of human and animal sacrifice infused in with the New Testament and like sewn together by the Romans. With the help of Josephus, who is the seamstress. Israel has been itching to attack Rafah and southern Gaza, an area to which the majority of the Gazan population has been pushed, creating a huge refugee encampment within the concentration camp that Gaza has long been. Right. The concentration camp that Gaza has long been. Right. And they're pushed everybody to a quote-unquote safe zone so they could blow that up too. This is how the Israelis work. An area that normally housed just over a quarter of a million people is now a refuge for 1.5 million, two-thirds of Gaza's population. It has been opposed by the U.S., but recent events with Iran seem to have produced a possible quid pro quo. Of course, and I'm sure that wasn't, you know, part of the little theater, the little Jesuit theater that we're witnessing. Oh, well, they threw a couple of rockets and a couple of drones that were easy to destroy over to Israel. And if that's even who did it. And oh, now we have an excuse to murder 1.5 million people because we said so, because reasons, and because somehow that makes sense, just like going into Iraq made sense. Because and here's the other funny thing. So we're mad at Muslims and think that they're horrible, you know, wrecks of human beings because Israel bombed the Twin Towers and set charges to blow them up. This is really what we're getting at, right? So the world was told Muslims, while there's Israelis dancing and celebrating, and they're covered in thermite shit and all kinds of stuff and painting uniforms. But and the people that were quote unquote the artists that were at that one floor that did blow up, all Israelis. So where's the Muslims? You mean the very clean passports that fell to the ground on top of the rubble, not underneath it? So they were easier to find, that weren't burnt up at all. Maybe a little dusty, but that was accidental. Then they all seemed to fall in a pile, right? Oh, look, there's all their passports. They survived and landed on the grounds for us to pick up. Must have been Muslims. People are fucking idiots. They didn't watch enough Scooby-Doo, I think, is what the problem is. They didn't understand how to put two and two together. I watched a lot of Scooby-Doo. So I've got the advantage. I shouldn't be so hard on everybody else. It has been opposed, but yeah, okay, I already said that. If Israel refrained from attacking Iran forcefully, the U.S. would get behind a Rafah invasion. If the attack on this remaining refuge would mean unfathomable carnage, and Netanyahu's speech is a laying of the groundwork. Yes, the attack on this remaining refuge would mean unfathomable carnage. Evoking biblical embodiments of evil is a Netanyahu trademark. Right. That's what psychopaths do. And especially ones that know, because they are part of the same wicked system of the Rothschilds who used the book that their ancestors most likely wrote to control the people. So just do it play by play and keep on making sure that you remind people why you're doing it, because it's God's will that Israel does all this. Somehow that makes us think that we're included in it because we grafted onto their religion, thanks to the Romans, and call ourselves Christians, which is something that was manipulated because Jesus didn't even tell you to do that. He didn't say build a church. He didn't say do any of this stuff. He didn't say have a pope. He didn't say any of that crap. So kingdom of heaven was within. You don't need to do all this nonsense. And you shouldn't be trying to force the hand of God because it's not natural. You shouldn't be trying to bring about the end of days anyway, you psychos. What about everybody else is saying that? Is everybody else ready to die soon? Because that's what they want us to do. And they'll do it by lots of different means. But the main goal is to get rid of us. They're automated now. They don't need the human workforce. They don't need the progressiveness. Evoking biblical embodiments, we already heard that. Technique since the beginning of the genocide when he used the Amalek analogy, referring to another existential threat to the Jewish people from the Bible who were eradicated down to their babies and animals. If any of that were true, now he is calling Hamas Pharaoh and calling for deadly plagues against them. Netanyahu himself, we are supposed to conclude, is Moses. Right, like I had said. This type of advocacy goes straight into the veins of many Israelis, and the timing is crucial. Yeah, they're very brainwashed over there. At least the ones that they show on TV, and maybe those are isolated psychopaths, but like that one woman who was like, yeah, I killed two Palestina, boom, 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 I killed two. And then the other one that was walking around with a baby's pacifier as a trophy around his neck. It was an IDF soldier because he had murdered a child, an infant. And he was carrying around the pacifier as like a like an ear. Like, you know, in Vietnam, they kept ears, cut off ears and made him a necklace. Yeah, this psychopath was pulling around the pacifier. Any Jewish Israelis are now, these are the people that we're going to try to reason with when they do it to us. And you say, oh, when that's, they're not going to do that to us. What do you think all these laws are for? They already own this place. Half for a while. Now they're going to make it less, instead of going the covert direction, they're going to go overt, meaning they're going to tell you, they're going to make it very obvious that, guess what? They have more rights than you do. And therefore, who owns the country? When 1% of them can bully the rest of us and then play the victim as they bully you. This type of advocacy goes straight to the veins of many Israelis, and the timing is crucial. Many Jewish Israelis are now going to celebrate the holiday of liberation, and the Israeli hostages, captives, are portrayed as the embodiment of the biblical slaves in Egypt. Yes, yes. The final and most painful plague in the Bible story is killing of firstborn Egyptians. It was actually a call beyond humans. It was actually a call beyond humans. It included the firstborn of cattle, too. Oh, wow. And it came to pass that at midnight, the Lord smote all the firstborn in the land of Egypt. Really? Because that's the benevolent creator who does all this for the people of who call themselves Jews these days. Really? Really? Really, he couldn't have just, you know, I don't know, affected the heart and warmed it, made it less hard, right? No, this is justification for multitudes of murders for the rest of history created in Exodus. And what God does that, and who are they actually serving? Well, I'm glad you asked, because it's Satan. It's Demiurge. It is Saturn. It is Kronos. It is Satan. It is Yaldabaoth. That is who they are getting this assistance from. It's not the God you think they're talking about. Don't assume things. From the firstborn of Pharaoh that sat on his throne, unto the firstborn of the captive that was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of cattle. It's awfully thorough. And God would have to have made such a terrible mistake with Egyptians that he just needed to eradicate them himself specifically, right? And then that's what Passover was, you know. And oh, by the way, we need more blood for that. This whole thing of Christ's blood even is a sick fucking thought. What is wrong with you? The blood of your savior, you're talking about the blood, his blood and his body. What is the matter with you? So this part of the Passover story describes a genocide that does not even spare animals, similar to the Amalek story. This is all coming out of the Old Testament sickness. As Jews, we have unfortunately been inculcated to perceive such utter destruction as merely necessary collateral for the liberation of our own. So this guy's a Jew talking. The Egyptians' hearts are again hardened as they chase the Israelites at the Red Sea, and they are drowned en masse with their horses. This was the happy ending. The evildoers, akin to animals, are dead, and we are the surviving chosen ones. But I am sitting here writing this awful story, asking myself whether we have progressed at all in the past 3,500 years. Thank you. Whether we have at all been liberated, or whether we are still, to this day, in the desert, still seeking our historical revenge, forever living by the sword, as Netanyahu once vowed. Bam! Love that ending. And this is called Mondo Weiss. A new opinion about Palestine, Israel, and the United States. Check it out. All right. Yes, they are 100% saying this. Brainwashed more than anyone. Yes. And that's all Frankists that influence that. Sabbatean Frankists. And I'm not saying anything that was wonderful before that, but, you know, whatever. Let's move on to, do I have the right thing up? I don't think I do. Yeah, I probably do. I don't know. Let me just double check. I'll skip it quick. Present arms, present screen. Okay, and those turn the sound down for fun, just in case we need it. In case I screw up. So where are we at? Boom. Now, I've got lots of notes here, and there's a lot to talk about here. And we got to get into the Age of Reason. We got to get into, this is the World Order by Eustace Mullins here that I'm looking at. There's a lot of stuff playing at once here. A lot of stuff. Holy cow. I took a lot of notes here. So on page 30, I guess we'll start there. Well, open it. Jesus, Jones. Are we on page 30 or not? No. Oh, we are on page 30. Okay. Ah, look at that. Perfect. Okay, so listen to this. So let's just go one page back if we can. How do you do that? Not on this screen. Nope. All right, so anyway, stockholders of Bank of England, the Joyers, informed him that their monopoly of interest-bearing notes in the colonies was at stake. He banned the script, with the result that there was an immediate depression in the commercial life of the Americans. This was the cause of the rebellion. They stopped allowing the colonies' money to be used for purchases, for debts, for anything like that. They made their money useless to Britain. That's what the cause of the rebellion was. They, just like they're trying to do with this central bank digital currency and get rid of paper money now, which also is, they have us idiots fighting and arguing over and trying to preserve and save fake Babylonian paper freaking curse money, because we won't want the thing that's even worse than that to starve us all out and kill us, which is what that would do. Central bank digital currency is a death sentence. This was the cause of the rebellion. As Benjamin Franklin pointed out, the little tax on tea amounting to about a dollar per year. Why can't I get this thing to skip? Fucking stupid. All right, here we go. A dollar per year, American family could have been born, but the colonists could not survive the banning of their own money. The Bank of England and the Rothschilds continued to play a dominant role in the commercial life of the United States, causing panics and depression for the Rothschilds wherever their officials were instructed to do so. When the second bank of the United States expired in 1836 and President Jackson, Andrew Jackson, refused to renew it, creating great prosperity in the United States when government funds were deposited in other banks, the Rothschilds punished the upstarts by causing the panic of 1837. As Henry Clews writes, you gotta check this out. I think it's better if I just go like this. Hold on. Here we go. Maybe a little bit harder on your eyes, less hard on your eyes. As Henry Clews writes, 28 years on Wall Street, the panic of 1837 was aggravated by the Bank of England when it, in one day, threw out all the paper connected with the United States. By refusing to credit American notes and stocks, the Bank of England created financial panic among the holders of that paper. The panic enabled Rothschild's agents Peabody and Belmont to reap a fortune in buying up depreciated stocks during the panic. It's the same thing that they did during the Napoleonic Wars, right, at Waterloo. The Bank of England has played a prominent role in wars, revolutions, and espionage, as well as business panics. When Napoleon escaped from Elba in 1815, the London gold market jumped overnight from... This is all garbled because this person who wrote this was writing it either with like one of those voice-to-text things, or it was corrupted with something else, because there's a lot of things in here that are messed up. The leading buyer was Nathan Meyer Rothschild, who was under orders from British Treasury to dispatch gold to the Duke of Wellington. What the fuck? All right, let's skip to... What the hell? There you go. Montague Norman was sent to New York to work in the office of Brown Brothers. He was befriended by the way, Brown Brothers, Brown Brothers Harriman, those people, I was talking about Avril Harriman before, those are all Rothschild's agents. They were here. People keep saying, the Rothschilds, blah, blah, blah. They've been here since the beginning. Let's see. Marco family, partners of Brown Brothers. In 1907, Norman was elected to the court of the Bank of England. In 1912, he had a severe nervous breakdown and was treated by Young in Switzerland. He became deputy governor of the Bank of England in 1916 and later served until 1944 as governor. The Wall Street Journal wrote of him in 1927, Mr. Collett Norman, the governor of the Bank of England, is now head of the shoulders. See, this is all skipping around. I'm not sure why it's doing that. But okay, let's move around. Left out in the Baruch Wilson Mutual Esteem Society was William Jennings Bryan, longtime head of the Democratic Party. Bryan not only opposed our entry into the World War I, he dared to criticize the family which had organized the war, the Rothschilds. Because he dared to mention the Rothschilds, Bryan was promptly denounced as anti-Semitic. This is an old trope, right? He responded, "Our opponents have sometimes tried to make it appear that we are attacking a race when we denounce the financial policy of the Rothschilds, but we are not. But we are no, not. What the hell? We are nor. See what I mean? There's corruption here. But we are nor we are. But we are not. Nor are we as much opposed to the financial policy of J.P. Morgan as we are the financial policy of the Rothschilds." By the way, same damn thing, because the Rothschilds created J.P. Morgan. He was worth like $10 million when he was dead. And he was handling billions of dollars for the Rothschilds. So he was definitely just a man moving money, not really possessing much of it. Because of the secret planning needed to launch a major... What the fuck? See what I'm saying? It just jumps for like no reason. What the hell are we doing here? 42. It's jumping again. It's going from location 616 to 619. I don't know what's going on with this thing. I just lost my place. Policy of the... Okay, here we go. But we are as much opposed to... Because of the secret planning needed to launch the major war, control communications, media was essential. Media was essential. Kent Cooper, president of the Associated Press, notes in Life, November 13, 1944, freedom of information. Before and during the World War, the First World War, the great German news agency Wolf was owned by European banking house of Rothschild, which had its central headquarters in Berlin. A leading member of the firm was also Kaiser Wilhelm's personal banker, Max Warburg. So you had Paul Warburg here, you had Max in Berlin, and you had Felix running around somewhere too. What actually happened in Imperial Germany was that the Kaiser used Wolf to bind and excite with his people to such a degree that they were eager for World War I. 20 years later, under Hitler, it says Heider here because this thing is corrupted as hell, the pattern was repeated and enormously magnified by D&B Wolf's successors. Cooper later noted in his autobiography, Barriers Down, international bankers under the House of Rothschild acquired an interest in the three leading European agencies, Havas, France, Reuters, England, and Wolf Company, Wolf of Germany. They also are owners of everything else, the Associated Press, or their people in them, like the Washington Post and all that stuff, right? Everything is controlled by the same demonic mouth. On April 28th, 1915, Baron Hubert de Reuter, chief of the Reuters agency, shot himself. I'm sure that's what happened. I'm sure that must have been he shot himself. The cause was the crash of the Reuters Bank, which had been organized by Baron Julius de Reuter, founder of Reuters, to handle foreign remittances without their being subject to any accounting. Yeah, wouldn't that be nice if your bank are the ones that are actually creating the news feed, right? He was succeeded by Sir Roderick Jones, who says it in his autobiography, "Shortly after I succeeded Baron Hubert de Reuter in 1950, it so happened that I received an invitation from Mr. Alfred Rothschild, then head of the British House of Rothschilds, to lunch with him in historic Newcourt in the city. Jones prudently refrained from telling us what was discussed at this meeting. It was an initiation, my friend. Only one member of Congress voted against the U.S. declaration of war against Germany in World War I, Jeanette Rankin. She was also the only member of Congress to vote against the entry into World War II. Opponents of Wilson's actions were often beaten and imprisoned. Eugene Debs was sentenced to a long prison term. Congressman Charles Lindbergh ran for governor of Minnesota on a platform opposing our participation in the war. The New York Times regularly ran scathing denunciations of his campaign. On June 9th, 1918, it noted Representative Clarence H. Miller denounced Lindbergh and the Nonpartisan League as seditious. According to Mr. Lindbergh, the Liberty Loan is an instrument devised by the money sharks. It seems inexcusable that any person allowed to be at large in the United States could entertain or express such a view of this. Harrison Salisbury of the New York Times states, I have searched out the records and they show that mobs trailed Charles K. Lindbergh Sr. during his 1918 campaign for Republican nomination for the Minnesota governorship. He was arrested on charges of conspiracy along with the Nonpartisan Leaguers. A rally at Madison, Minnesota was broken up with fire hoses. He was hanged in effigy in Red Wing, dragged from the speaker's platform, threatened with lynching, and he escaped from town amid a volley of shots. So this is how they roll. Salisbury neglects to mention that the squad of federal agents from the Bureau of Investigation, led by J. Edgar Hoover, on his first important action, attacked Lindbergh and his family, dragged out all the copies of Lindbergh's Your Country at War, and burned them on the lawn. When young Charles rushed toward to stomp out the fire, Hoover knocked him down. Hoover was right on scene doing this. In the summer of 1917, Woodrow Wilson named Colonel House to head the American War Mission to the Inter-Allied War Conference, the first such American mission to a European council. With House were his son-in-law, George Auchincloss, and Paul Kravath, Kuhn Loeb's lawyer. Yeah, Kuhn and Loeb lawyer. Auchincloss was director of Chase National Bank. Now this gets into stuff that yada, yada, yada. Let's move on a little bit. Let's move on just a little bit here. The Leninists quickly exhausted the funds advanced by the German banks. Let's make sure that we get that correct. When they reached Russia, and once again, the Bolshevik bid for absolute power seemed in doubt. To whom should Lenin turn but his powerful friend in the White House? Wilson promptly sent Elihu Root, Kuhn and Loeb lawyer and former Secretary of State, to Russia with $20 million from his special war fund to be given to the Bolsheviks. Remember, the murdering Bolsheviks, the starving, murdering Bolsheviks. Who are we again? Instruments of the Rothschilds. That's all we are. We don't have a constitution. We don't have any of that. We were already dissolved, not at this point in history, but we were already conquered in 1865. We are all around the world talking about how we are going to make it safe for democracy, which is another word for socialism and communism. Meanwhile, saying that we're fighting communism and we're funding it. We're funding mass murderers. Why do you think they're so emboldened? The only thing that's opposing them is fake opposition. There is no opposition to evil, none, except for you, except for me, except for us individually. There's no other opposition to evil. Don't let that television set teach you any other way. The only opposition to evil is in your own heart. Okay. This was revealed in congressional hearings on Russian bonds. H.J. blah, blah, who cares, which shows the financial statement of Woodrow Wilson's expenditure of the $100 million voted him by Congress as a special war fund. The statement showing the expenditure of $20 million in Russia by Root's special war mission to Russia is also recorded in the Congressional Record September 2nd, 1919, as given by Wilson's secretary, Joseph Tumulty. Where are we at? Let's move up a little bit. Marx's economic views were entirely compatible with the views of the banking establishment in the City of London, and particularly the House of Rothschild. It is no accident that Karl Marx is buried not in Moscow, but in London, nor is it an accident that the triumph and bloodbath of the Bolsheviks in Russia gave the Rothschilds and their associates $1 billion in cash, which the luckless Tsar had deposited, and we're talking about Tsar Nicholas II, had deposited in their European and New York banks. Few people know that Max had a close relations with the British aristocracy through his marriage to Jenny von Westphalen. She was related to the Scottish Dukes of Argyll, who had long been revolutionaries, and the Campbells, who set up the Baptist splinter group, the Campbellites. Jenny von Westphalen's ancestor, Anna Campbell, Countess of Bachlaras and Argyll, was governess to the Prince of Orange from 1657 to 59. The future King William, who later granted the charter of the Bank of England, Archibald Campbell, 1st Duke of Argyll, accompanied William on his voyage to England in 1688 to seize the throne. The present Earl of Bachlaras is related to Viscount Cowdray Wheatman, John Churchill Pearson, who his mother was daughter of Lord Spencer Churchill. Yeah, and moving on and on and on. Yeah, let's get back to this thing. We can need to move it just a little bit further than that. This one. Give me this one. There you go. November 28th, 1917, his associate, Colonel House, Mandel House, had cabled Wilson a few days after the Bolsheviks seized power, urging the extreme importance of suppressing all American newspaper criticism of the Bolsheviks. It is exceedingly important that such criticisms be suppressed. The telegram was placed in a confidential file and only came to light 6 years later. In the unknown war with Russia, Robert J. Maddox noted in 1977, Wilson greeted the March Revolution in Russia as a major step towards achieving the kind of post-war world he envisioned. He made sure the U.S. was the first to recognize the provisional government. Maddox points out that Wilson insisted that number six of his famous 14 points at Versailles was that Russia should continue under institutions of her own choosing, thus guaranteeing the future of the Bolshevik regime. His closest political aide, Colonel House, sent his own secretary, Kenneth Durant, to Russia to become secretary of the Soviet Bureau in 1920. We were the government, for God's sake, of Russia while they were doing this shit. Same thing with Avril Herman going over there. The banks were in control of all this stuff, and control of our country and control of every other country, allowing wars to happen, allowing murders to occur, getting rid of even, you know, if you want to call them, yeah, there's a lot of Christians that were murdered too. Yeah. It wasn't the only people. People in general murdered because that's what feeds the beast. Blood. The same blood that they talk about in the Old Testament because they're sick. William Lawrence Sanders, chairman of Ingersoll Rand and deputy chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, wrote to Wilson October 17th, 1918, "I am in sympathy with the Soviet form of government as the best suited for the Russian people." Oh, yeah. George Foster Peabody, also deputy chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York since 1914 and noted philanthropist who organized the General Education Board for the Rockefellers, aren't we thankful to that asshole, stated that he supported the Bolshevik form of state monopoly. Thus, we had three of the most prominent officials in the Federal Reserve Bank of New York on record as supporting Bolshevism: Sanders, Peabody, and William Boyce Thompson. Thompson then announced he was giving $1 million to promote Bolshevik propaganda in the United States. $1 million in those years' money, right? minus all the inflation. Because the Federal Reserve Bank of New York was controlled by five New York banks who owned 53% of its stock, and because these five banks were directly controlled by Nathaniel Meyer, I think it is, and M. Rothschild and Sons of London, we can only conclude that these three men were merely stating the preferences of their employer. Exactly. The National City Bank had already loaned Russia $50 million and Guarantee Trust, whose directors were leading financiers in New York, now became the financial correspondent for Soviet interests in America. In January, says one, 1922, January 1st, 1922, Secretary of Commerce Herbert Hoover introduced on behalf of Guarantee Trust a resolution permitting relations with the new state bank at Moscow. Let's see. Let's move on a little bit. Let's move up one. The first shipments of Soviet gold, which was actually Tsar's gold, were deposited in Guarantee Trust. So after they looted Russia, they gave it to the Guarantee Trust. In a typical move to disguise their operations, Otto Kahn and several officials of Guarantee Trust then founded an anti-communist group, United Americans, which circulated virulent anti-communist and anti-Jewish propaganda. See what they do? See what they do? Now do you understand what controlled opposition is doing? Why they want, you know, why certain people aren't getting canceled for saying what they say? Because they want to stir up that other side too. It's a good smokescreen and good cover for them not to be, you know, implicated in being the nefarious ones causing all the havoc and making everything terrible and evil, right? You know, Trump doesn't even go with that. He just goes straight up, you know, Christian Zionist. Yeah, whatever. Let's just kill them all. He's basically, and by the way, more shots are good for you. This guy's not the person. There's no people if you're picking the ones that they give you. I mean, the people need to take back the country, not some fucking scumbag like that. Anyway, moving on. Like most such organizations, it was designed to discredit and render impotent anyone opposed to communism who became involved in its work. So, anti-communist group is supposed to render impotent anyone opposed to communism. Anti-communist group designed to discredit and render impotent anyone opposed to communism who became involved in its work. You get that? So, inversion. Captain Opposite Day, right? On February 1st, 1919, Edward L. Doheny, the oil tycoon, told C.W. Barron, founder of the Wall Street Journal, hopefully it better be interesting, buddy, President Eliot of Harvard is teaching Bolshevism. The worst Bolsheviks in the U.S. are not only college professors, are we catching all this? Are not only college professors, of whom President Wilson is one, but capitalists and the wives of capitalists. Frank G. Vanderlip is a Bolshevik. Socialism is the poison that destroys democracy. Socialism, see, this is, again, who has been telling us this forever? William Cooper, but he was only quoting what they had said, Lenin, Trotsky, and a little bit of Mao, that democracy is the gateway to socialism. Socialism's ultimate goal is communism. All right. Socialism is the poison that destroys democracy. Socialism holds out the hope that a man can quit work and be better off. Bolshevism is the true fruit of socialism. The world headquarters of the Bolshevik movement was now at 120 Broadway on the Wall Street. The Equitable Life Building at 120 Broadway had been built by a corporation organized by General T. Coleman DuPont. During the early 1920s, 120 Broadway not only housed Equitable Life, but also the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, whose directors were enthusiastically supporting the Bolsheviks. The American International Corporation, which had been organized to aid the Soviet Union, Weinberg and Posner, which received a $3 million order for machinery, from the Soviet Union in 1919, and whose vice president was Ludwig Martens, first Soviet ambassador to the United States. John McGregor Grant, whose operations were financed by Olaf Ashberg of Nya Banken, Stockholm, who had transmitted large sums furnished by the Warburgs, for the Bolshevik Revolution. The London agent of Nya Banken was the British Bank of North Commerce, whose chairman was Earl Grey. Isn't that funny? Earl Grey T. Want to know who he was involved in? A close associate of Cecil Rhodes, the Rhodes Foundation, right? Grant had been blacklisted by the U.S. government for his support of Germany during the World War One, and on the top floor of 120 Broadway was the exclusive Bankers Club. There were the organizers of the world order. Their instrument of power was gold. The great Soviet encyclopedia noted, under socialist economic conditions, gold is also a universal equivalent used as a measure of value and a scale of prices. Could you imagine looking at some of the crap that you see in Walmart? Some of these like surprise eggs and these mystery toys made out of Chinese plastic and being like, oh yeah, that's worth about $8 worth of gold. You got your freaking mind? If people thought that way, they wouldn't buy this shit. They wouldn't be continuing to, I mean, the children might influence them to do it because you want to make your children happy and all that, but you just got to teach them, hey, this is crap. We can get you something nice if we just get you something a little bit better, right? You don't need to have this impulse control problem where you have to have every little thing you see, because the next thing you'll want to. Man, just think about that for a second. Under the socialist economic conditions, gold is also a universal equivalent used as a measure of value and a scale of prices. The gold content of the Soviet ruble was established at 0.0987412 grams per. And then it skips because it's retarded like that. Grams as per January 1st, 1961. All right. In the world socialist market, gold is used as a universal money. You may want to get some of that. Many Americans are, or silver. Many Americans are puzzled. Oh, by the way, it's going to be called outlawed soon. So yeah, if you have it, hide it. That's okay. They'll find it. Many Americans are puzzled by the relentless devotion. See, it's relentless. This whole thing is corrupted. This is really hard to read sometimes. Many Americans are puzzled by the relentless devotion of the Rockefeller Foundation to financing communist organizations in many parts of the world. Let's say that again. Many Americans are puzzled by the relentless devotion of the Rockefeller Foundation to finance financing communist organizations in many parts of the world. This dedication to communism can be traced back to a crucial moment in the Bolsheviks' march to power. In 1917, Mackenzie King had established a lifelong relationship with John D. Rockefeller Jr., whom he met in June 1914. They had been born in the same year, 1874, and seemed to agree on everything. Soon, King was working closely with Frederick T. Gates. I highlighted that because he's also somebody who you'll see how he works in with the Rockefellers and the little thing he put together for them. The Ivy Lee to further the Rockefeller philanthropies, which seemed to view communism as the ideal vehicle to bring about world brotherhood. Ooh, there's the word brotherhood. And we know what brotherhood is synonymous, is another word for initiation into the black magic, dark arts, brotherhood. When you're utilizing metaphysical powers, those that we do not recognize in this day and age as being real, as being like ghosts or the dead. This necromancy is not the dead. It's demonic presences. And apparently there's some that are helpful and kind, but are still in service to the Dark Lord, if you will. And then there's those who are more warlike, more like warriors. And then there's those who are hell-bent on just destruction at every possible way, bloodthirsty. So there's like three levels to these spirits that people conjure. and ask for things for them, and they try to keep the genie in the bottle. It's insane. And by the way, those things can be sent toward you and after you. So there is very real things as psychic attack. There's also very real things as a presence. And those things will kill you. It's not a poltergeist if a book flies out of your hand and smacks against a wall. That's something else. Poltergeist is a nice way of saying, you know, this is just an energy in the room without direction. And so it's like a Loki. It's just mischief making. No, that's not what that is. Something wants you dead, or it wants to get your attention. King wrote to the you know what you should do? You should get my book and see if it flies out of your hand. That's what you should do. King wrote to this friend, Violet Markham, John D. Rockefeller Jr., the truest follower of Christ, has one purpose, to serve his fellow man. Oh my God. I can't believe I just read that out loud. John D. Rockefeller Jr., the truest follower of Christ, has one purpose, to serve his fellow man. My God. King resolved that his one purpose was to serve Rockefeller. He testified for him at the trial investigating the Colorado Iron and Fuel, yada, 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 J. Edgar Hoover. The Rockefellers helped Mackenzie King obtain government contracts for Canadian Army during World War I, which set King up later blackmail the Panama hold over the vassals. Let's move on. We got about 10 minutes left. Still page 68. Boom. We already did that. Come on, brother. Yeah, we already did that too. Come on, man. Oh, here we are. Yeah, I don't care about that. These are all tabbed out, so that'd be easier, but it's still kind of a pain in the ass to run through. I don't really need to go like that. There's a lot of stuff in here that I found interesting, but I'm not sure if anybody else would. The Rockefeller family is sometimes called the first family of the Soviet Union. When Nelson Rockefeller, remember, Nelson Rockefeller is the guy who bought John Welch's candy company for 20 times its value and then kept him on for 15 years at a super high salary. When Nelson Rockefeller was nominated for vice president in 1967, Pravda indignantly denounced his critics. Pravda, a Russian publication, a very propaganda-ridden Russian publication like there's anything else out there back in that day, saying that charges against Rockefeller were designed only to discredit him, and that, well, if Russia is saying that, then you already know this guy is dirty as shit, right? And he's going to be serving them. And that the accusations came from ultra-right-wing organizations, right? They had to create that sensation in people. All these fairy tale things that don't exist, like white supremacist killer clowns that are just after Jews for no reason whatsoever. No, it's because you kill people that you're killers, and therefore we have a problem with the fact that you kill people. That's what we're mad at. You being a Jew doesn't make a difference, but you just happen to be. So now it's because of that. Well, then anybody can pretend that they're a Jew when they're doing bad things, and then we're not allowed to say anything about it, right? Well, that's what they do. Senator Frank Church attending. The 1971 Dartmouth Conference at Kiev was amazed to find that David Rockefeller was treated like we would treat royalty in this country. The Russian people appear to evince an adoration to Rockefeller that is puzzling. When David Rockefeller's plane lands in Russia, crowds line up to greet him at the airport and line the streets of Moscow at as his limousine passes, hailing him with cries of Rockefeller. George Gilder remarked that no one knows how to revere, blandish, and exalt a Rockefeller half as well as the Marxists. After World War II, Dean Achelson financially lobbied for an additional $300 million loan to the Soviet Union. Ed Berling, who was Frederick A. Delano's brother-in-law had founded the firm of Covington and Burling, of which Alchison was partner with Donald Hiss, brother of Alger. Alger Hiss. Yeah. Alger Hiss. Great guy. Helped us get the UN, right? Yeah, that's a wonderful guy. He's a communist spy, by the way. Let's move on. What did I do that for? Oh. So I was talking about the X Club in another book. I was reading another book, and so I found this interesting. Let me see if I can back this up on page. All right, so it says, Kennan was the nephew of namesake of the George Kennan, who operated a Marxist agent as a Marxist agent for Jacob Schiff in Russia for many years before the Bolshevik Revolution and was finally expelled by the Tsarist government. Kennan's pen name, X, was a favorite identification of socialist operatives. So what is everything called X? Potentially a favorite namesake for socialist operatives. How you doing, Elon? How's it going over there, buddy? In 1902, the Socialist X Club had been founded in New York by John Dewey, whose socialist program has dominated American education during the 20th century, still ongoing. And this book was written in 1984, by the way. The other founders of the X Club were James T. Shotwell, founder of the League of Nations, United Nations, etc., Morris Hillquit, communist candidate for mayor of New York, Charles Edward Russell, and Rufus Weeks, vice president and managing director of New York Life, which was controlled by J.P. Morgan, a Rothschild agent. When Nikolai Khrushchev, dictator of the Soviet Union, came to New York on September 17, 1959, he was invited to dinner with W. Avril Harriman. 30 people attended, and who controlled aggregate wealth of $40 billion. They included Russian-born David Sarnoff, head of RCA, Philip Mosley of the Council on Foreign Relations, Herbert H. Lehman of the Lehman Brothers, Dean Rusk of the Rockefeller Foundation, George A. Woods, First Boston Corp., Thomas K. Finletter of Cooter Brothers, former Secretary of the Air Force, John K. Galbraith, economist, Frank Pace of General Dynamics. In September 1960, Khrushchev was entertained at Hyde Park at a dinner given in his honor by Eleanor Roosevelt. Present at this select gathering was Victor Hammer, who had fenced the Romanov jewels. Oh, that's wonderful. Stealing from the dead that they murdered in a basement in Siberia, right? Victor Hammer, who had fenced the Romanov jewels in the U.S., he sold many Fabergé items to Lillian Pratt, wife of General Motors tycoon. The collection is now in the Virginia Museum in Richmond, Virginia. In 1973, the U.S.-USSR Trade and Economic Council, consisting of leading U.S. heads of corporations, was formed to promote trade, red gifts to the Soviet Union. And let's move on. We got about 2 minutes left. All right, so here's what we're going to do. Didn't realize how fast we went. All right. Get this out of my face. Get out of my face. All right. So, hi, everybody. Frederick T. Gates vaccinated the population for Spanish flu in 1914. Bill Gates vaccinated the population for COVID-19 100 years later. Coincidence. Very good. Very good. Very good, old saucy. Yep, Moses Mordecai Levy was his real name. Socialism is the road to communism, Karl Marx. Correct. And he didn't ever... Oh, by the way, his planks were written by the Jesuits. Just saying. He just put his name on it. Yeah, part of the Patriot Act is they're trying to stop sales by and purchases by the quote-unquote terrorists that don't exist. So therefore, gold and silver will be confiscated so that they can prevent the terrorists, the just like the viruses and the terrorists and the unicorns and the leprechauns from getting you and taking advantage of their, you know, they're just trying to kill you. They're just trying to make you starve to death. And they just want you to be dying and begging for their help. And they'll either step on your neck and finish you off or rape you before they kill you. Who knows? Whichever. Whichever one you can. So anyway, with the time left, you see this book in the top right corner, top left corner, top bottom corner, top bottom corner, bottom right corner, bottom left corner. That is called Priestcraft Beyond Battle.